Right, so like I said, I'm Dana Bosco. I'm from the IDA Science and Technology Policy Institute. Basically, we are a FFRDC, a federally funded research and development center that supports the executive branch of the government, specifically in sort of analysis and sort of policy questions. To start, I have no relationship to disclose. So this project basically started from an independent project we were doing to understand health information technology. So it was really a broad landscape overview. What's going on? Who are the major players? What is the federal government doing, and what should they be doing? And from that, we sort of looked more and more about people talking about mHealth, mobile health, as sort of this emerging field, this idea that, you know, it's going to solve all of our problems and it's the next greatest thing. And so we wanted to understand sort of what actually was the current state of mobile health, what was actually going on, and what's the difference between promise and actual possibility. And at the same time, we figured out that there was sort of a continual interest in emergency preparedness by the federal government. So there was a whole surge of activity after 9/11, but then there's still this continued interest in how do we develop the right mechanisms for responding to public health emergencies. And so that really came out in two documents. The first is Executive Order 13527, and that was a directive by President Obama for the Postal Service, actually, to design a system for delivering medical countermeasures after a biological attack. So how do you get antibiotics to people so that they can stay healthy after some sort of biological attack? And so that was a really interesting model that is actually continuing to be developed and tested. And the second was the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, funding an IOM report on pre-positioning antibiotics for anthrax. So where do we have to put these drugs in sort of certain locations so that in an event of a biological attack, how do you get them to people quickly, and how do you make sure that they're going to start taking these antibiotics before they develop symptoms? And so in looking at sort of these two sort of parallel activities within HHS, we wanted to understand basically what could the applications of mHealth be for this sort of scenario. What are the sort of principles and what are the benefits of mobile technology for public health emergencies? And so we came up with really three questions. And the first essentially just being, what's currently out there? What are the current mHealth applications for natural and man-made public health emergencies? So while we're focusing on biological attacks for this presentation, we're really looking more broadly. What can you use this for in sort of any sort of public health emergency where people are concerned and they need information? And then secondly, what are some potential benefits of using mobile health during these events? So what are the benefits that mHealth has been used more broadly, and how could they be applied to sort of this situation? And then third, how can you get from those potential benefits to an actual application, to an actual intervention? And so the first question, and we used actually a case study of anthrax for this. So just to frame sort of what are the potential uses, we wanted to use a broad situation. So the situation we used is actually borrowed from the IOM report and the postal model report that I referred to. And so it's a terrorist attack in an urban setting using antibiotic-resistant aerosolized anthrax. The concept that anthrax is going to be spread to a large population all at once. And we really, as a group that's focused on supporting the federal government, we're concerned in what is the potential federal government role to provide medication and support. So there's going to be a local and a state response, but what is potentially the federal response? And we had a few assumptions in this, and this actually helped us sort of frame what we were looking at. And the first is that a large population would need sort of prophylaxis. So they're going to need antibiotics, they're going to need countermeasures, and it's going to probably be delivered outside of the care setting. So you're not going to be going to a hospital, you might not necessarily go to a clinic, but you may be going to certain points of distribution to get this medicine. So you're not going to have a traditional, you know, delivery of a nurse telling you this is what you should take and explaining how to do it. The second is that there's a quick recognition of the attack. So, you know, there's a concept that you could have an attack and no one could know and we won't find out until there's symptoms. But for this study, we really assumed that there was somehow either syndromic surveillance that picked up that there was an anthrax attack or some sort of a part of a larger scheme. But that there was also potentially a delay in recognizing antibiotic resistance. You may recognize it's anthrax, but assays may take a while for you to figure out that, you know, it has certain antibiotic resistant properties. And that the third, and this is sort of the most important, is that syndromic surveillance is useful and potentially possible to collect information directly from the public. So in a public health emergency like this, you could actually collect information on symptom development from the public, and the public would be willing to provide this. And we'll walk through how that potentially could happen. And so this is really the crux of our study, is figuring out how is that possible and how could you design a system for that. And so we first wanted to look at, so what's currently out there? What are the mHealth applications? And we really focused on three different areas. So two are federal efforts. So there are a variety of federal efforts to build mHealth applications. They're public-private partnerships. One of the big ones you may be familiar with is Text for Baby. It's an application that sends out basic text messages to pregnant mothers throughout their pregnancy to give them advice on taking medicines, on going to see your doctor, and a variety of things. And the second was really on mHealth challenges. So there have been a variety of challenges across HHS and actually other parts of the government to develop sort of either towards targeted sort of interventions, so how can you get people to quit smoking, to sort of broader things of how can you use this data set to help people. And so the little icon right next to there is actually the winner called Mappy Health of a Twitter app contest. And what this did was they pulled public Twitter feed information and they look for to see if certain sort of illnesses are developing in a specific community. So are you talking about, you know, using Kleenex and having a runny nose, and is that in a certain area, and people are, and they're cold. And so that's a really interesting evidence of sort of public use, but it's really passive surveillance. It's, you know, it's people things already reporting, and how can we gain insight out of that? And then thirdly, of course, there's, you know, a whole barrage of private efforts. I think this is something like the third or fourth largest growing category of applications in the iTunes store. So there's things proliferating left and right. And so these range a whole thing. So the photo calorie is, you know, how do you track your diet using images of your food, to something like Microsoft Health Vault, where you actually have your personal health records on your phone or on your mobile device. And so we wanted to look at specifically what is their app development in emergency preparedness. And fortunately for us, the National Library of Medicine collects information on disaster apps and sort of mobile optimized websites. And so this is actually a listing of most of them that are on our website. And you know, I'm from DC, and so Frankenstorm's going on. So the ones in the top right from the Red Cross actually are potentially very useful. And what we realized actually, though, quickly is that these apps are really designed on pushing health information. They're trying to get public, you know, the public information quickly, but they're not thinking about how you could gain information from the public. So these are all really one-directional, and we wanted to think about the other way. And so leading to that, we're really thinking about what are some potential benefits of using mHealth in this situation. And we really came up with sort of three main areas. The first, which I think everyone would naturally agree, is sort of providing real-time information to people, you know, pushing directly to the public information that they need to know about whatever's going on. So in an anthrax situation, you know, where do you need to go to get medicine, essentially? The second is sort of more novel in thinking of preparing guidance on seeking care through questionnaires. So can you help people think through, do I really need to go to a hospital? Do I really need to seek a physician? Or do I just need to stay home? And that's, I think, really pivotal when you think about sort of surge issues and hospital surge and how do you protect people from going to a hospital who are really just the worried well. And the third is the idea of syndromic surveillance. So thinking about how can you use sort of active information gathering from the public and potentially use information that was provided in the app while going through this questionnaire to then track what are people's symptoms, what's going on. And so that's a potential use of providing information and then asking questions that this third use, you may be able to gather from a large group of people that you wouldn't necessarily in a situation like a cold, you know, not everyone's going to respond on their phone, no, I don't have a cold. But if you're concerned about, you know, do I have anthrax exposure, there's potential benefit for you to go through this app and ask these questions. And so that really moved into our third question, which was really what are the strategies and considerations required for developing mobile health for these uses. And so the first one we're just saying, the first set is just application design strategies. So how do you design an application that would actually be functional for these reasons? And so we broke it down, and we'll actually break this down in the next couple of slides. So the first is messaging. How do you use messaging? How do you construct the right messages? Especially when we're talking about, you know, if you're wanting to talk about a large population, we're not just saying smartphone applications. This could be SMS, text message based. And so how do you design, you know, short, brief messages that really actually help individuals? And there actually are some great examples of this. The CDC has one that is actually prepackaged messages for text messages for a variety of instances. So they have them prepared. They're on their website. Local and state groups can actually download them and send them out. And so and they've actually designed them so you could actually add your own information. And so there are potential ways to package this information. And there's also, you know, conversely, thinking about sort of mobile optimized sites. So maybe you're not designing an app, maybe you're not having a text message service, but if you know, so many more people are accessing, you know, websites on their phone, how can you design a mobile sort of optimized website? And the third is thinking about, you know, how do we tailorize messaging? If we know something about them, if we know we're talking about elderly populations or we're talking about pregnant mothers, you know, are there concerns that you want to tell people specifically in those target populations that you can help them and that's more information that's pertinent to them? And the second is thinking about sort of these questionnaire ideas. So how do you get to help people figure out, do they need to seek care? And there's actually a, sort of three areas we looked at sort of to provide sort of analogies or direct sort of support of how this could happen. The first sort of idea of diagnostic kiosks in emergency departments. So in the late 1990s and early 2000s, there was, you know, proliferation of studies about how do you use basically a desktop computer or a tablet in an emergency room to help either provide information or gather sort of information on their symptoms. And so there's some great lessons about that, and they're really, some of them are very simple. An example is providing text and an image. So if you're talking about, are you taking this drug, show me what the pill looks like, show me what the bottle looks like, and asking and listing the name. And the second is thinking about sort of algorithmic analysis of self-reported symptoms. So you may not be able to understand immediately what they're concerned about. Can you gather information from them generically? So this is sort of the idea of WebMD, if anyone's ever gone on to use their symptom tracker and figured out, you know, do I have these set of symptoms? And so it's an idea of how do you build an algorithm around figuring out what the right questions to ask are. So if you have an initial symptom that you're saying, what are the next three things I should ask you about? And also just how do you gather information and how do you use it constructively? And the third actually is a study that's ongoing that's actually done by RAND. And they're currently, they did a pilot where they tested, can we ask a certain questionnaire for parents to understand if they need to seek care for their children who have the flu. So do they have flu symptoms strong enough that they need to go to a hospital, or can they use at-home care? And so that's actually being piloted sort of in a larger group around the United States, and that was initially done in the D.C. area. And so there are actual possibilities of being able to design a questionnaire that could help people figure out, you know, do I need to go to the hospital or do I need to stay home? And thinking about this, we also want to think about sort of integration. You know, this is not necessarily talking about an application you need to build, the government needs to build, and that can only, you know, work on itself. There's a variety of sort of integration techniques you could use for other applications that have built in to try to provide information. So the first one is sort of, you know, other application functionality. So for example, the iTriage app, which is an app that also tracks your symptoms and tells you, you know, potentially what you might have. But it also recently has integrated local hospital and provider information. So you have, you know, the flu, you actually need to go see somebody, but where do you go? And that's actually, you know, the data is there, it's just how do you integrate it together? And that's being done in this system in local communities. And the second, sort of the idea of hospital system integration. So if we're thinking about surge protection, how do we then provide that information to the hospital so they can know who's coming, or they can keep track even within their hospital where these people are? And so the Bethesda Emergency Preparedness Partnership is actually a really interesting organization that's used actually RFID tags, so little basically GPS tags that track people through the hospital to see where are the choke points. You know, in an emergency situation, is everybody in the lobby? Is everybody in triage? Is everybody, you know, where are the choke points to figure out how they can smooth out that system? And then lastly, thinking about how you can integrate this with further data. So, you know, how can we gather in, if we wanted to use this for syndromic surveillance, how do we gather in information you've already collected about people? And that's potential through personal health record integration, so using what already exists and integrating with the information they're providing. And so this is an example where Microsoft Health Vault is actually integrated with iTriage to send information as part of the application. And in this, of course, we have to think about legal considerations. And this actually came out to be a huge issue, both in terms of privacy and security for storing information, but also sort of the liability for people who would develop this sort of technology. And so the first part is really, you know, I think everybody's sort of familiar with HIPAA laws and the concept that there's a real concern with how do you protect and store public, protected health information. And the problem is with this information, even if you're asking very basic things, that does fall under PHI. And so there are a variety of private and federal efforts to sort of document best practices and sort of security concerns. These documents are really sort of general. There is no specific strategy. There is no IT strategy that's like, if you do this, you'll be fine. And so that's tough as it's still developing. And the second sort of larger thing is sort of potential liability. So under new HIPAA regulations that was developed under the High Tech Act, which is part of the R Act, the Recovery Act, there was this new regulations for business associates. So they basically, if you are a developer, you are now considered as sort of a business associate. It makes you just as liable as a hospital or as a physician in terms of if health information is released. And so the Congress sort of thought about this and realized, you know, there's concerns about, in an emergency, how can I protect this information securely? How can I make sure that this is all, you know, happening when you're building up, you know, mobile clinics in random places and you're trying to respond as quickly as possible? And so these things called Section 1135 waivers for during declared emergencies, and that basically allows during declared public health emergencies, so that's the President or the Secretary of Health and Human Service saying this is a public health emergency, during those situations for a brief period of time that you can have sort of waivers from HIPAA. And that potentially is a protector. There's actually a disagreement on whether this is actually legal, whether this waiver actually holds up in a court, and it hasn't been tested yet. And so there are actually concerns that even though this was designed to help people in emergency situations, this may not actually be full protection enough. And so, and we didn't even touch on, but I just want to highlight that there also are sort of state and local privacy laws. So there are things beyond HIPAA that you'd have to be concerned about. And so this really means that there's a disincentive to app developers. So if you're wanting to develop these things and you have this technology and there's possibilities to develop these questionnaires, but then you're potentially liable if this information gets leaked, that's a huge concern. And so this is my last slide of just saying, you know, potentially what can the federal government do? You know, thinking about, you know, from our perspective of trying to assist the federal government, you know, what should happen? How can you develop an app that can help for public emergencies? And so one area is sort of develop an app. You have the federal government take on the role of actually developing something that could be useful, that you would hopefully that would be spent to all people, so everybody would download or everybody would use some more sort of SMS service. And so that could really be done through the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology or the CDC. And you could also theoretically offer incentives through CMS. So through the meaningful use criteria that already exist, could you develop something additional that has some sort of relation to mobile health? And the last is really just thinking about guidelines and collaborative support to developers. So how do you help them figure out what the issues are and where do they need to go? And so the HH Office of Civil Rights is a great group to actually help proliferate some sort of guidelines and sort of announce what they should be doing. The FCC has expressed some interest in doing this and has partnered already. And the FDA could also release some information on sort of non-device-based medical applications. So at the end of the year, we're expecting FDA to come out with some information about regulating sort of mobile technology, but they've sort of chosen to sort of bypass the issue of mobile apps specifically, so things that aren't sort of device-related. And so if they actually chose to address this issue, it would be really helpful sort of figuring out how to go along without being sort of liable. And I just want to acknowledge my colleagues in this project. And that's it.